Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
April 15th, 2025, Donald Porter. When and why did you join the military?
I joined the military Air Force, Army Air Force, in 1947, January of 1947, on the 30th. And the reason I joined, I had a good friend that was in the Air Force, and one of the local neighbors here in Farley, the Hendricks brothers. And we, every time he would come home, I'd talk to him. And one day, that was before I reached the age of 17, he kept talking and talking. And so one day, when I reached the age of 17, I asked my dad to sign. I had to get him to sign for me, and he wouldn't do it. So it took me 6 months to convince him that I should go, and he said, okay. So he signed me up, and that's when I joined the Army Air Force in January of 1947.
What did you think of military life first off, and how was basic training for you?
Well, military life, it wasn't much different, because of course at that time it wasn't in very long, but it wasn't. The only thing I didn't have to do, I didn't have to get up in the morning and milk cows. And the basic training part was great. We had 17 weeks of basic training, which was a long time.
Yes.
That back then. And everything went well.
Yeah, you were a good, strong farm guy.
Oh, yes.
And so, yes. And say where you were again.
Pardon?
Where were you when you did your basic training?
Lackland Air Force Base, San Antonio, Texas.
Okay, and then you went to where?
From there, I went to a tech school in Denver, Colorado, Laurie Air Force Base. And from there, I went to MacNeil Field Air Force Base in Florida, Tampa, Florida.
Okay.
And stayed down there for, I don't know, it wasn't too long, maybe a year or so. And then I was transferred to Topeka Air Force Base at that time. And we stayed there for... wasn't up there too long, but they decided they was going to close it. And I went to Fairfield Susan Air Force Base at Sacramento, California.
Okay.
Or San Francisco, California, I guess would be the address for it. And I was only out there for about 90 days, and I got discharged. My three-year tour was up at that time. And I came home, and there was a friend of mine, but I can't remember his name. We were going to come home and do something. And when we got home, he stayed with us. We was living up there on the farm. We stayed home for about 15 days or so, and he decided he wanted to go home. So he took off, went home. And a few days later, I went back over to Sherman Air Force Base and re-enlisted over there starting on my second tour. And I stayed there until, I don't know, I think I was there pretty close to a year. I'm not sure exactly so far ago. I went to Scott, up to the Scott Air Force Base in Illinois to the...
I know where that is.
To the Communications Cryptographic School. And I went to the crypto school. From there, I went to Long Island, New York, to an ACNW site, and was in the crypto center operation. That's classified messages and stuff. I think it was about a year I was there, and there was a set of twins in the crypto center with us, and one of them got an assignment to Korea. Well, the military at that time, I don't know if they're doing it nowadays, but at that time they would not separate twins. So I got stuck going to Korea for that guy. And that was in February of 1952. I went to Seoul City at Kimpo Air Force Base at Seoul City. And we got there, I don't know, it was sometime about 10 o'clock or something like that. They met us. There was a whole busload of us. And we went up to, they took us up to the staging area where they would keep us overnight and then put us out to our assignments the next day. And about, it was sometime around midnight, we heard these sirens go off. And pretty soon here come a sergeant in there, and he said, "Get up, get out to the foxholes." He said, "There's air raids." So it was cold. We all grabbed our blankets and we headed for the foxhole. And pretty soon they cleared it and said, "Okay, you can go back to bed." The next day we found out that air raid, or that radar, picked up a flock of geese. And that was the most exciting part of it. And from there on, it was just like a normal tour duty, basically. I stayed in Korea. I didn't stay the full year. I stayed there for about, because the communications there was part of the Strategic Air Command. And they didn't like anybody that didn't have training in the Strategic Air Command in their communication centers. So they wanted to make a telephone operator out of me. I sat on that switchboard. It was about a mile long. I sat on that switchboard for an hour, and I walked up to the supervisor. I said, "I'm not going to do this. I got to do something else." So he said, "Okay, go over and talk to the commander, squadron commander." He told me, I talked to the squadron commander, and he said, "Well, what did you do before you went to the communication?" I said, "I was a Form 20-ish man, took care of records." And he said, "Oh, really? I need one. You got a job."
Oh, good.
So I got out of that, and I got out of the telephone deal and went over. And I can't remember how long it was. There was just a few days that the base operations control tower needed a one-person telephone operator just for the office area. And he wanted to know if I would do that. And I said, "Well, I'll try it." So anyway, I found out, it wasn't in there very long, I found out that there was a message that came in from Miho Air Base in Japan. That was the backup rear echelon for Korea. They wanted three crypto people, crypto operators. So I went down to the squadron commander and I said, "I want to go." And he said, "Well, that's good. You can go. Says pick two other guys that you want to take with you." So there's three of us went back to Korea, or back to Japan, and that's where I spent the rest of my year. We did have to go back to Korea one time to bring our records up to date, but it was just like an overnight stay, and then we was back in Japan.
I see.
When I came back from Japan, I went to Big Spring, Texas, to Webb Air Force Base, as a pilot training base. Stayed there for approximately three years or something like that. And then in 1956, I was transferred to Elmendorf Air Force Base in Alaska. We drove the Alcan, which was quite exciting. It was gravel roads. Almost at that time, it was all gravel roads.
Right.
And I spent 3 years there. And I came back, and I was assigned to Paramus, New Jersey, where the Federal Electric Corporation, electric company, they were the new line contract. And I went there as a communication inspector for the new line. And I made several trips to the new line inspecting the communications, me and the communications officer. And from there, I went to Germany in 1962, I think it was. Went to Bremerhaven, Germany, and spent 3 years there in the security service, the Air Force Security Service. And I spent my 3 years there and came back to Fort Meade, Maryland, to the National Security Agency. I was in NSA for 3 years.
Okay.
And that's where I reached my 20 years by that time, and I was getting, you could stay one place for 20 years, or 3 years, but then they'd reassign you, probably back overseas. And at that time, the Vietnam War was getting going, and I didn't want to go to Vietnam. So I had over 21 years. I had 21 years service, and they said if you put in for retirement before you get your assignment, you don't have to go. But if you get your assignment, then you can't retire until you fill that assignment. So I said, well, I'm not going to take a chance. I don't want to go back to Korea, and I definitely don't want to go to Vietnam.
Right.
Well, anyway, I put in for my retirement, and they approved it. And then a few days later, my orders came in. It was for Korea. And I said, no, I don't want to go to Korea back there. I didn't like it over there at all. So that's when I retired in September 1st, 1968.
So yeah. You've been retired a long time.
Oh, yes, several years. But overall, the service was really good to me. When we got out of the service, we came home, and my brother Jim had built me a house. I went to work for him in his machinery business and worked there for a while, and then I went to work for a grocery store as a meat cutter, which he had to teach me, but anyway, I became a fairly decent meat cutter. And then from there I went to Fort Leavenworth to the commissary as a meat cutter. And then after that, I went to back to Richard Gebhardt Air Force Base down in South Missouri there.
Grandview.
And in the commissary. Worked there for a little bit, and they decided they was going to close the commissary. So they closed the commissary, but they found jobs for all of us on the base there. And my job, since I had a communication background, I became the communications officer for the squadron at Richard Gebauer. Yeah, see, I don't know, I can't remember how long we were there, but quite a while. And a friend of mine from ham operators that back in those days where we was yak-yakking all the time. He was the communications officer over at Fort Leavenworth, at the communications command over there. And he called me one day and he said, "Would you like to come to Fort Leavenworth?" I said, "Well, I don't know, mate, what doing?" He said, I need a plans and program officer. And he said, "I'd like to have you work for me." So I said, "Okay, if that'll work." I said, "If you'll move me back to Weston." He said he would. So anyway, that's where I went out over there, and I spent probably 1989 in December, I retired from civil service and became a full-fledged civilian. Yeah. From then on, we went to Tennessee, Whiteville, Tennessee, and I did maintenance work for a housing area, air conditioning, all air electrical, anything. I took care of several apartments and stuff like that. And then my wife decided she wanted to come back to home. So we came back to Weston. I went to work over at Platte City for a little bit. And in 1972, I hung my hat on the wall and said, "I'm not going to go back to work anymore." And that's when I officially retired, not having an income other than my Social Security and Air Force retirement right. And stuff like that. But anyway, that's about the story of my life.
That's awesome. What does it mean to be a crypto operator?
You take a plain text message and code it, and it's scrambled, and send it on the teletype lines. And then when the other end gets it, they have a machine. They set up their machine based on the information and decode it.
Okay.
It brings it back to plain text.
Well, it's the highest
security
classic clearance you can have.
Top secret. Everybody in crypto had top secret.
War message. Games played, or what? War moves, or whatever. You know. So.
Okay.
Like if you didn't get into work on time, they'll send the MPs for you. Find out where you are.
So, were you involved in anything during the Cold War? Then the World War II was over.
It was over.
And then the Cold War came in next.
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere. Let's see. I went to Korea.
The National Security Agency?
Huh?
NSA? Well,
yeah, he said NSA.
Yeah. Yeah, I was... went to NSA, and that was in 1962. And I became the alternate crypto security officer for the National Security Agency before I retired. But the Cold War, when was it? I can't remember now. It seemed like it was when we were in Germany. Were they flying into Berlin and?
Yeah.
But I didn't have any.
Was that when Kennedy? When did Kennedy die?
1963.
Okay, we were in Germany when Kennedy died.
Yeah. And as long as we followed those orders, and keep our mouths shut, we wouldn't have any problems. So that's the plan that I accepted, and that's what I did. The only bad part about it was you have anybody that had one more stripe than you did, had he could tell you what to do, you know, and there was a lot of that. You know, it didn't work out so good, but you had to do it. Or if they would want to, they could court-martial you. But I never did that. Have to worry about that. I just said, yeah, okay, let's do it. And that was it.
Do you have any memorable moments from your first few months in the military?
The first day in the military, I was at Sherman Field waiting to go to Fort Riley. And I lost all my money, $5, in a slot machine. And after that, I said, no more slot machines. It was kind of rough, but $5, at that time.
That was a lot of money.
That was pretty good because our base pay was only $75 a month at that time. But anyway, I learned a lesson there real quick, like, and that was at 10 cents a shot.
How did you keep in touch with your family and friends back home?
Well, most of it was, we communicated with letters. I called Mom every once in a while, we talked on the phone a couple of times, didn't we? When I was in New York. And
not very often.
No, just.
Couldn't afford it. It was mostly,
New York. Yeah, you had to pay long distance phone calls. And that's,
but
most
like
of
now.
It was letters. Mm-hmm. And,
now, what were some of your initial goals or expectations regarding your military career?
Well, I guess my goal was to make as many stripes as I could. And I didn't make them all, but I was 87. That was 6 stripes. There was 2 more to go when I retired. I would have probably made E8 if I would have stayed in, because I was eligible for it and I'd already taken all the tests and everything for it, and but I decided it wasn't worth it to go take a chance on going to Vietnam, so I went ahead and retired.
Okay, how did you adjust to the uniform and other aspects of military dress?
Well, I thought the uniform was pretty neat. The way that we had to really dress them things, they weren't tailor-made, but they fit pretty good, and I thought it was pretty neat. And when the Army Air Force, in September of 1947, the Army Air Force divorced the Army, and we became United States Air Force in 1947. And that's when we got the new type uniform, the blue uniform. And everybody thought that was really a neat uniform, a lot better. We liked it a lot better than we did the brown uniform.
Yeah.
But I didn't have any problems with them. It worked out okay for me.
What are some of the more memorable experiences from your deployment?
Taking my wife and 3 children to Germany with me.
Okay. How did you like Germany?
Oh, it was a good assignment, really. It worked out really good. I liked the area. They had a beautiful golf course. Played golf almost every day. But it was a beautiful place.
And it was not an Air Force base, you said? Bremerhaven?
No, there was no Air Force there, or no air base there. It was a national security agency base, security service, and they did the mission there was they accomplished. They had an analyst that can speak all lingos, and they could listen, you know, for different
countries
talking, or they were monitoring the airways, but there was no aircraft.
Okay.
It was all ground force there, but it was strictly Air Force base. But it was a lot of stuff there that took place that I don't want to talk about it. But it was really a good assignment, and our living quarters was pretty good. We had it wasn't on the base, it was off base on the German side of the area there. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you were still in communications though?
Yes, there. The security service.
Okay.
Yeah, same job, crypto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you and your fellow service members support one another?
Well, that's a good question. So I don't know. There really wasn't nothing happened to anybody that you would really have to give them support, you know. I guess just by, if you were a friend with somebody, and maybe if someone passed away in their family or something like that, you would talk with them. But it really wasn't much of a problem.
You were in at a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Good time.
How did these deployment experiences change you? Maybe from Korea to Germany?
Oh, I don't think it changed me any. I think it was, as far as my person, you talk about personality, I don't think it changed anything. I think it was pretty much routine. All this, just transferring from one base to another, pretty much routine.
And doing the same job.
Doing the same job, yes. I don't know why you had to move, but that's the way the service did you.
Right.
You spent 3 years someplace, you had to move.
Okay. What was the hardest part about being deployed?
Oh, getting all the things that you had to gather up and take.
Throw away a lot of stuff. You only move so much.
And taking your family with you was a little bit more difficult because you had a lot of extra luggage and stuff to carry. But other than that, we didn't mind it too bad. When we went to Alaska, we drove to Alaska and in a car, slept in the car all the way up there, all the way back. That was pretty good. But it was, something like that was the hardest part, was getting everything lined up and putting storage, what you have to put in storage, waiting for you to come back home, that type of thing.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the experiences in Alaska.
In Alaska? Well, the first thing I can tell you about Alaska is the mosquitoes were so big that the aircraft controllers gave them landing instructions. That was a joke. But they were big. And other than that, the first winter that we were there, everybody had to go out on Arctic survival. And so when the time come for me to go on Arctic survival, it just happened to be 40 below zero.
Ouch.
Yes. So we went out, and we had to build our lean-tos, and they put three men in each lean-to. with our sleeping bags. And one man had to there had to be one of us awake at all times to keep the fire going in there. Mm-hmm. Well, when my time come, I woke up, the fire was out. The guy before me went to sleep and didn't keep the fire going, and it was smoking all over the place. And anyway, we got it going again, and that night, it was like 40, like I said, it was 40 below zero. And they knew a lot of the guys, I was really feeling bad with the smoke, but they took a whole slug of the men, I can't remember now how many it was, 15 or 20 of them, to the hospital to get them checked. And one of the guys passed away. He had froze to death. And so when that happened, then the command said, oh, call it off, and they brought us all back to the base. But that was the bad part about that one poor guy passed away at the hospital. Mm-hmm. But other than that, the snow was deep. The kids had fun playing in the snow. And other than that, everything's just kind of like any place else. It was just a normal routine. That day, you had to get up and go to work, you know.
Yeah.
Then we worked shift work.
I forget, but didn't they tell us that the kids could play out till zero? They could be outside to zero, and then when it hit zero, we should probably keep them in and not let them play outside. So. Mm-hmm. So they played out. They skated in the street.
That's good.
So when we were in Germany, I kind of noticed it more because we were living in the, you know, quarters. Actually, they were quarters. They weren't American quarters, but they were beautiful quarters. And we supported one another with entertainment. By playing cards at night, we'd go to one another's houses and play pinochle. Actually, was the game. I say that's a military game. Our children could go with us and play with their children, and we could put them all to bed because it, you know, pretty close and watch out for them. So we had many good times like that, numerous good times like that, and it was a great community. We all enjoyed that very much. We've had a lot of friends that we corresponded with through the years left over. So,
and did you have a sponsor that helped you get started in a new place?
Yes.
Jack and Gail, and we followed them to, we saw them again, and when we were at Fort George G, Maryland, they were living near Washington, D.C., and so we corresponded and we saw them physically. When we were there, you know, went over to visit them. And we corresponded for years. We don't anymore. I don't know what's happened to them. But I know some of our friends have lost their spouses. And some are very close here, even in Missouri. Some, a couple live in Liberty that we were stationed with, too. So they kind of stay with you forever, you know. It's just... you know the way, and you know what you have to do, and if somebody packs up to leave, a military family is there to help you have a dinner and help you watch your children and share what they have once your stuff is gone so that you have sheets and everything to sleep on until you get to your new place. So, you know, it's a buddy system. It's really... when I go on to a military post to this day, I'm at home. I feel at home. I feel at home at Fort Leavenworth, very much so. And even an Air Force base would be, you know, a little too. So.
How did you cope with the difficulties of a language or cultural nature during your deployment?
We didn't have any problem because all of when we were in Germany, the only time that we had to associate with the Germans is if we went downtown. And we had a little problem with the talking to them, but we could, most of the Germans could speak enough English that we could get by. But on the base itself, in my job, there was no foreigners allowed because of the security clearance. And everybody was American. I'm not saying that there wasn't some foreigners, Germans working on the base, but they didn't work in the communications area.
So how did you meet your partner or your spouse?
Well, we first met, I knew her when she was a little girl, because she rode the same bus as I did to going to school. But anyway, she was grade school and I was in high school. But I met her for the first time. They were at a dance at Turner's Hall, was it?
Yep, Leavenworth, Kansas.
In Leavenworth, Kansas. And me and my friend I was stationed out at Topeka Air Force Base, and I'd come home over the weekend, and we went over to that dance, and that's how I met her.
So I know that you both are really good dancers, right?
Well, I don't know about that. We love to. I love to.
We dance.
So how did your military service affect your relationship?
Oh, I don't know that it really affected it too bad. It was until when we got married, the separation was a little bit awkward, but we were together 90% of my marriage life, so it didn't affect it really too bad.
Early days was when it was in New York, when Sherry was born, our firstborn, and then the tour of duty that originally started as Korea. That was the only time,
yeah,
actually, that we were separating.
Yeah.
Alaska tour was considered, we were there when Alaska became a state. So that was an overseas tour, basically, when it began. And so we were there, and then for Germany we were. So it was pretty good.
Yep.
Okay.
And the way I stayed in touch with her was, well, there again, was written communications.
Right. What would be your critical advice for military couples?
Now?
Important advice for military couples.
I don't really know.
I would say make friends with your fellow servicemen and their wives. And I think basically they still do that. They depend on one another. Be there, ready to help them when they move, like someone will be there to help you when you move. And, share children things and help, like have a play day at your house. Let them have a play day at their house or something so your children are well, you know. And I think children that are of military are well-rounded kids usually. You know, they have activities on the base and everything they can do, and probably if you lived on base it would be helpful if you were a scoutmaster or something, or you helped too. And I think that's important in their children's lives and yours as well as your husband, that you are someone that would be out, that would be a spouse helping a career.
Right. What advice would you have?
Oh, basically it would be the same thing. It's the people that you work with, the majority of them were married, and you know, you just every once in a while go visit each other, and
even your civilians over at Fort Leavenworth in the civilian world, or the civil service world, and a lot of military in there, but a lot of civilian employees, and we were friends with them, you know. It just makes her nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Were there support systems that your family used or have access to while you were serving?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. You could talk to a pastor at your church, or you could check out dishes, you could check out pots and pans, you can check out bed things, you know. The post always has something that you need, and you can check them out and use them until your household goods comes in. So they have a lot of support systems.
Okay, how did the military service shape your family values?
Say that, which one is it?
19.
19. That, I don't know how to answer this.
Pride. I mean, it made you proud.
Well, yeah, it was
the military proud of your system.
Proud to be in the military, and I was proud of my family. But as far as shaping your family values, I don't think it would be any different than if we would have been civilians.
Yeah, you already had that from your parents.
Yes.
And your parents.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. It just emphasized it. And I think even to this day, it just grieves me when I see someone that the flag is coming down or going up. They don't think to take their hat off, or they don't think to place their hand over their heart for our flag, to honor our flag, which is American values, you know?
Right.
And I know over at Fort Leavenworth they had a tradition. I think they still do it, but I don't think they follow it as closely. They have a bugle that, you know, goes off in the evening when the flag comes down. And used to, you had to get out of your car and stand. And they don't do that as much anymore. If you're out and you have to stop and stand, you know. But I admire that, because it shows that you're proud of
respect.
What you're doing. You're proud to serve your country.
That's awesome. I really like 13.
Huh?
13.
13.
What traditions or routines kept your family close?
Ooh.
Like Christmas, well, holidays, birthdays. Yeah. What did you all do?
Well, if we could get home for leave to Christmas time, we tried to make it in Christmas time, depending on where we were at, and depending on the weather and everything. But Christmas was, I think, was always the big one for us. Mm-hmm. And that we'd come home and we'd go to her folks one year, and then the next year we'd go to my folks. Mm-hmm. And split Christmas Day. We'd visit them both on Christmas Day, but one we had the dinner with, and the other one we had a visit with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I had, when I was stationed in Moriarty, New Mexico, I took private pilot lessons, and my instructor was a crop duster. And he would come, we had a little small aircraft that we had bought for our club, and he would come, we kept it down at the airfield where they had a controller. And it was just a grass strip, and we'd leave the airplane down there, and he would be there, and when we'd go down to take a lesson, he'd go off with us. And one day he was down there with his crop duster, and he said, you want to take a lesson today? And I said, yeah, I want to take a lesson. He said, okay, we can't go in my crop duster, but we'll go in your airplane, and I'll show you what it feels like. And he did. Wow. That's quite an experience.
What, up and down?
Up, down, under the electric wires, just hopped over the fence.
Oh my gosh.
And you can see, when you're going along the ground, you can see the tops of the wheat or grass or whatever it was that we were spraying. The wheels of that airplane was touching them. It was that close. And then he'd get to the end and he'd go straight up.
He was fearless, wasn't he, Don?
Oh, he was fearless.
He was fearless. He had a huge family, too. And remember the rodeo?
Yes.
They had a rodeo down here one time. I can't remember their names, but...
I can't either.
That's terrible. But he was absolutely, nothing bothered him. And the kids and the wife were all the same way. They were just dying.
They'd have
people.
To be.
They'd have to be, not be scared to death like every time he was doing something.
Okay. I don't think I had any problems. And I don't think there was any hard part about it. Fact is, it was easier because I didn't have as many bosses. And we just kind of fell in line. And the thing that I missed the most about the military was that you knew that everybody was almost 100% honest. You didn't have to worry about somebody stabbing you in the back or stuff like that. It was just a tight-knit organization, and everybody got along good. There was a few battles. Somebody would challenge somebody to a boxing match, but they'd put on the gloves. It wasn't fist, it was gloves. But other than that, it was really good. And the way, with my military experience, it helped shape my life towards everyday living, because you knew what you were going to be doing every day. And it got in just a kind of a routine. And you get up, put your clothes on, and go. And that was about it. And retaining any habits or routines from military, I did. After I got a little bit of time into service and was started to work day shift only, I'd always be up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to work. And even today, I get up at 6 o'clock. Not all the time, but most of the time. Yeah. Okay. That was number six. Number seven. What struggles did you have finding work or starting a new career? Well, thanks to my brother, I didn't have any problems finding work. I went to work for him immediately after I got home. And that took care of, that was a big help, because at that time, my retirement pay was like $230 or $240 a month. Which wasn't bad, but I still had to have a job, and he put me to work real quick.
What did you do?
I worked in his used machinery business at Tracy as a mechanic. And a welder. In fact, I did just about anything around the shop that we could, and overhauled tractors. Things like that.
Okay. What of the skills learned during your military service have proven most useful in civilian life?
When I retired from the military, I was a communications specialist, and I went back to work in a few years later, as a civilian. Communication communicator doing practically the same work as I did in the military service.
How did you feel on your last day in the military?
Well, I had kind of a mixed emotion thing. I didn't want to get out because I wanted to stay. I was planning on staying for 30. I didn't want to get out, but I didn't really want to go to Vietnam.
Either.
So I was kind of a mix. Emotions.
Sure. What was the first thing you did when you came out of the service?
Loaded up my family and came back to Missouri. Yeah. That was
excited,
the first thing we did.
All of us.
What was your experience with health care and other veteran services when you left the military?
We had, when we left the military, we were still under the Army Fort Leavenworth Military Hospital over there, provided our health care. And as we grew older, when I reached the age of 65, I had to go on Medicare and dropped the military part of it. But everything seemed to work out pretty good. The only thing I'm really unhappy with is the Veterans Administration. For some reason, I'm retired military with almost, I had 21 years, 6 months, and 4 days, which gave me 22-year credit. I can't get anything out of the VA, but somebody that has 2-year service or a 3-year service or a 4-year service can go to the VA and get about anything they want. I don't like that. I tried to get hearing aids from them, and they said I made too much money. Well, I know these people that only spent 4 years in the service, make more money than I do, and they can go to the VA and get them. And I don't understand that, but I don't worry about it. I just let it go.
No stress.
No stress.
I think it's the initial, what you do initially when you get out or when you hit that 65. Maybe go to the VA and, because I know people that, you know, go there now and have as many years in service as he does and get some. I have some friends. But when we retired, you know, we had 3 children, 4 children, that used the services at Fort Leavenworth. I was never unhappy with the military doctors. They did good service for us. And dental, some dental work. We got a limited dental work. And we could get eyeglasses sometimes, you know. He does get his glasses from Fort Leavenworth, and that helps too. But they always treated us. And the pharmacy, we still have the pharmacy at Fort Leavenworth as retirees, and they're very good. Yeah, we have a TRICARE for Life thing that they talk about. And we have that, well, maybe we do and maybe we don't, you know, but right now we do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah. Any closing remarks, thoughts?
I wouldn't have changed it for anything. It was wonderful to be in military life. I love seeing the country. I love the travel. I'm glad my children got that part of the education. They were in Europe and, you know, different places that we've lived and seen as we traveled. And I think they love it too. And Sherry, of course, went back to work for the civil service, and Beverly married one now, so, and I loved it. It was a great experience.
If I had it to do over, my big change, I would stayed in high school and graduated and went at least to 2-year college and then joined the Air Force. I could could have become an officer and pilot training. I would love to have done that, but I didn't have the education, and I had to stay enlisted man all my service time. But that would be the only thing that I would do, would now, if it was now, I would do that. Get the education. The people I found in the Air Force, and I suppose it'd be the same in all branches. The more education you had, the faster your ranks came. Even though my first 6 years in the Air Force, I was an E6, and then it took me from 6 years up to 18 years to make E7, because there were so many master sergeants and officers, or officers that was after the war, they gave them a grade of master sergeant,
right,
and they filled all the quotas, and we didn't have a chance. We was coming in behind them.
Right.
But that would be my, I think that would be the only thing that I wouldn't take anything for the experience that I've got from the military. And since we got out of the service, I've done a lot of different things. We had a grocery store and a restaurant. I worked for civil service, and everything worked out really good.
I wish he could have done that too, because I think he has the mind for that, and his skills are varied and many that he's not just good at, but very good at. You know, he can plumb, he can electric, he can do anything if he reads the manual, and he knows what to do.
Right.
And he's invented a few things around the house that are so handy that he needed a patent on, but it is. We have a great-granddaughter that is debating. She's in ROTC, and her mindset is very good. She wants to get all she can from the ROTC and go into the service. She doesn't know what's a couple of years of college first, and then ROTC with that. How she's figuring out how to make the best grade and get in there. And she's going to love it, I think.
Did you take any classes while you were in the military? Like toward your education?
I got my GED.
Okay.
I completed that. But that helped.